right now. And I think I see, well, hang on. I thought I saw a cloud, but no.
No.
And yeah, it's a beautiful day. So here we are.
Well,
I'll be back Tuesday night, so don't, you know.
Yes. Our skies are not even gray. They're white. It's just white right now. It's pulverizing right now.
Awesome. I'm very excited to come back to that in a couple of days.
No, you should extend your stay for another week.
Done. I'm never.
All right. Leaving. The big news coming out of spring training this week is that Salvador Perez, Royals catcher, multiple Gold Glove Award winner, has an elbow injury, a UCL, which we normally associate with Tommy John surgery. But the Royals have been very clear in saying they're getting a second opinion, so nothing is set in stone yet. But the Royals are facing the possibility of having a full season without Salvador Perez. And look, I know the Royals are deep in terms of talent in the minor leagues, but this is a crushing blow for Kansas City baseball fans.
Yeah, it's, you know, from a team perspective, from a team identity perspective, Salvador Perez is the Royals, along with it's like, you know, he's the identity of the team, and it's difficult to lose that. It's also difficult to lose a 25 to 30 home run bat, which he is at this point in his career. He doesn't get on base very well, but he's a power hitter, and the Royals don't have a whole lot of power in their lineup. If you look up and down it, it's Whit Merrifield, who's a 12 to 15 home run guy, Billy Hamilton, who's a 5 to 8 home run guy, and Chris Owings is going to play regularly. He's a 5 to 8 home run type guy. It's just up and down the lineup, not a whole lot of power, and missing Salvador Perez's bat in the middle of that order is going to miss out on some home runs. This might be a super hot take. I don't think it's as doom and gloom as people think it is, because Perez isn't that good of a catcher, which I know everybody, you know, half the people listening probably dropped to the floor and fainted when I said that. He's a great thrower. When he's really paying attention, when he's really in the moment, he's a fantastic pitch blocker. But far too often he gets lazy blocking pitches. And framing, catcher framing, which is not, there's no perfect science to how that's measured. I mean, they're still in the early stages of it. But Salvador Perez is really bad at it. And part of it, I think, is because he's so big and it's hard for the umpires to see around him. But part of it is just some catchers just aren't that good at it. Now, the upside here that I think that, you know, the Royals aren't going to win this year anyway. They weren't going to score many runs anyway, which makes the offensive loss a little bit more prevalent. Although, you know, again, it's really just power with Perez. There's no OBP there. The upside is Cam Gallagher, who might get the bulk of the starts, is a phenomenal framer. He's very good defensively. He's got some work to do offensively, which he may never do. But I think this is actually not the worst thing for the Royals pitching staff and developing some young pitchers. Mabrys Feloria, maybe he gets a crack at the big league job. I think that would be a little short-sighted, given I think he still needs some time to cook in the minors. But, you know, he was up in September last year and showed some things. Was okay in the Arizona Fall League, too. It looked pretty good behind the plate. I think that really benefits the pitching staff. Now, and the other option is they've talked about, or we've heard rumors of them reaching out to Marte Maldonado, who is an absolutely phenomenal defensive catcher. I mean, he won the Gold Glove in 2017 over Salvador Perez and deserves.
I was gonna say, he's the one guy who interrupted the Salvador Perez streak, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he can't hit a lick either. But he's not Butera over 150 games, but which thank goodness they don't have Drew Butera anymore, because he was as bad a defensive catcher as Salvador Perez, framing wise. I mean, without any of the bat. So that would have been a tough Butera starting five out of every six games. But yeah, I think it's I think that there are some positives to this, and maybe it's total spin zone here, but I think it's possible that the Royals, while the team probably doesn't do as well, they miss him from a team perspective. I think the pitchers might be okay without him, no matter how much they say they like throwing to him, because everybody loves throwing to Cam Gallagher too. So, you know, with that in mind, you think about the one guy I thought of when this went down. I mean, think about when Jake Junis was thrown to Cam Gallagher in 2017 and how much he said he enjoyed it, how much he loved it. He had his best game thrown to Gallagher, and I think that's a little overstated sometimes. But I feel like Junis, Brad Keller, I think, is a guy who can really benefit from better framing. Jorge Lopez could actually benefit from it with that big curveball. I think that there are a few pitchers who really stand to benefit from having an elite frame, I mean, not even elite, but a very good framing catcher behind the plate more days than not. And so there are positives to it. And the other side of it, too, Royals aren't going to win in 2019. That was never going to be they were never going to be a contender in 2019 unless a million things broke right.
Right.
And now when they maybe think they can contend in 2020, which I don't think they will, but, you know, they internally you're always optimistic. Salvador Perez is going to come back on completely fresh legs. This is a guy who's caught so many innings, and now he's going to come back in the last 2 years of his contract having not caught for a year. I think there's some benefit to that for the future Royals too. So, yes, it's a crushing blow, but I don't think it's all horrible.
We're speaking with David Leske, who covers the Royals and writes about baseball for Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Twitter, at DB Leske, DBLESKY. And you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullig is running the show. David, since you've been out there and you've been watching the catchers, we saw Valorius, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, but we saw him a little bit last year. But the Royals organization is deep in catching talent, and that is a rare commodity in Major League Baseball. As much as we talk about pitching being the currency of baseball, catching is the hardest thing to find in Major League Baseball. First of all, kind of walk through who the Royals have and why are the Royals so adept at identifying this catching talent and having this lineup of 2 to 3 guys who could be up in the majors within the next year or two?
Yeah, so, starting at the top, after Perez, Cam Gallagher, who I think is, just has a chance to be one of the better backups out there. Now, he is probably not going to be a minute, but he's got enough pop. He can work a walk here and there. Not going to hit for a ton of average, but I've already mentioned his defense. So he's right there. Mabrys Feloria, we saw him last year, like you mentioned, in September. He hit, I think, like 360 in Idaho Falls a couple of years ago, which it's a great place to hit. So that's not
which everybody in Idaho Falls makes a living there. Billy Butler did it there.
yes, exactly. But you know, he still did it, and so he can't fault
right.
him for doing well where he was forced to play, basically. But so he's a solid piece guy. You don't talk about a ton is Xavier Fernandez, who finished last season in Double A. I think he's kind of in the mold of Cam Gallagher. I think he's just a 15-20-year big league backup catcher who you get him 30-40 games a year. You love it, and you're happy with him coming in the ninth inning when you got a pinch run for your catcher to win the game, something like that. So he's a really nice piece. And then you've got MJ Melendez, who is one of the Royals' top prospects, maybe the Royals' top prospect, depending on who you talk to.
Right.
My old cohort, Clint Scholes, has him number one on his list, I believe. And Melendez, he's the guy. He has a chance to be an absolute superstar. He's 20, so he's a couple years away, but he's in big league camp. He homered the other day, Monday or Tuesday maybe. Just absolute rockets off his bat. He needs to cut down the swings and misses, but he's got something there. And then Sebastian Rivera, who teamed up with Melendez last year in Lexington, and the Royals think very highly of him. From what I hear with Rivera, it's similar to what I remember hearing with Salvador Perez, which you think, well, I've never heard of this guy, and now we're hearing all this praise for this guy who, like, why? But I think he could be a fast riser similar
right.
to Perez. He calls a fantastic game. So there's a lot of depth there. And look, if I don't think this will happen because of how well he started his season at Oregon State. But Adley Rutschman is probably the number one overall pick. But if he's there at number two, I put it at a 100% chance the Royals take him because Oregon State was in surprise playing in a tournament, I believe, last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was.
Right. Yep.
And Ned Yost.
Yep.
Just absolutely loves the guy. I know that Yost probably won't be the man.
And Ned Yost knows catchers.
Yeah, and Ned Yost knows catchers, which that kind of leads to the other part of your question, which is why the Royals are so adept at finding them, and they value it. Every team needs to find a catcher, and obviously they value finding that right guy. But the Royals have a very strong belief of throwing a lot against a wall at positions that you need a lot. And they've done really well with some of these international catchers, Rivero, Fernandez, Valoria. Those guys were not through the draft. They have a really strong catching development system in place. Chino Carajia is still part of the organization. He's phenomenal with catchers.
Yep.
Rene Francisco, I think, does a nice job of identifying catchers. And there's a very strong emphasis placed on catching. And so I think that's paying off for the Royals. And that's what helped get them to Salvador Perez, who, like I mentioned, was an unheralded prospect. We look at that farm system in 2011 and you talk about the nine top 100 guys. Salvador Perez was not one of those nine. He was probably not one of the just 10 that missed. He was probably not one of the just 75 that missed. He was kind of, here's this great defensive catcher who can't hit. And then he comes to the majors after spending most of the season in Wilmington and hit 330 over his last 40 years.
Right.
So they
right. Brian Polberg is the manager at AAA Omaha, who was a catcher for most of his career in the Royals organization. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they love their catchers, and it shows because they do a really nice job of identifying them and developing them.
We're speaking with David Leske, who writes for Baseball Prospectus, does a lot of Royal stuff. By the way, every Friday morning, if you want your little hot stove update, David usually publishes a Friday Thoughts, and so follow him on Twitter to get that article at DB Leske, Lesky. David, as we're talking about injuries, one more to kind of hit on there is Danny Duffy. And look, I've been to enough spring trainings where I know what the dead arm is for a pitcher. You get a few days in, my arm feels dead. I get that. But is this are you concerned about Danny Duffy in this? He's supposed to get, I think, an evaluation again on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think they said he was going to throw tomorrow again. Is tomorrow Monday? I don't even know what day it is. I think
yes, tomorrow is Monday. The snow is making us forget the days of the week, but tomorrow is Monday.
it's the sun for me. So
yes.
I think he's supposed to throw again tomorrow. With the guy who had shoulder issues last year, if he has shoulder issues to start the spring, you worry. It's definitely something that you at least take notice of. The one encouraging thing that I think is, I haven't had a chance to talk to him while I've been down here, but I've talked to people who have. And as you know, Duffy is honest to a fault. He will.
Yes.
If he's hurting, he'll tell you he's hurting, and the Royals will probably tell him, shh, don't tell people that.
Right.
So with that in mind, I think what he says matters a little bit. And from what it sounds like, he wasn't even concerned the slightest bit about feeling any discomfort in that shoulder. And like you said, it's, what are we, 2-3 weeks into spring? That's about the perfect time for a guy who hasn't been throwing competitively and he hasn't pitched in a game yet. But you're still, when you're working out with a team, you're still throwing competitively. That's about the time when things will start to bark a little bit. You're worried because anytime you hear shoulder, period, it's a worry. Anytime you hear shoulder with a guy who had shoulder issues the year before, it's a worry. But I'm cautiously optimistic here that it's just a typical spring tired, and he should be good to go here in a few days.
All right, you're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show. Our guest is David Leske. Writer for Baseball Prospectus, covers the Kansas City Royals. Follow him on Twitter at DB Leske, Lesky. David, I'm not sure when you talk about position battles in camp. The Royals have not had many in a while. But right field is certainly as crowded as it's ever been. And I'm not sure, you know, how much it'll mean in the grand scheme of things, but my gosh, they have, it seems like 15 right fielders. as you have watched the team in Surprise, Arizona, is there somebody who stands out? I'm sure, you know, from a money standpoint, from a trade standpoint, the Wade Davis trade, we would all like to see Jorge Soler succeed at that position. But injury-wise, I just don't think that's within the realm of possibility. I think it's a DH rotation guy along with right field. But who nails down that right field spot for the Royals?
Well, so the Salvador Perez injury might make things a little bit fuzzy there. Because
the DH possibility, right?
Yeah, there is a chance. And, well, I mean, this will clear up in a couple of days, so this answer will be useless here soon, potentially. But
right.
there's a chance that he ends up not opting for surgery, ends up at DH and maybe some first base in 2019 while he's rehabbing that elbow, which I don't think is a good idea, but I think it's possible. And if that's the case, Jorge Soler is the right fielder until he gets hurt, which he will, but until that point, he is the right fielder, and it's not even a question. If Perez does have the surgery and misses the season or even half the season, my guess as of right now is Brian Goodwin's the right fielder. Jorge Soler is the DH for the most part. Obviously, he'll play some right field. And I think a lot of what you'll
right,
see,
the rotate.
See some platoon. Yeah, you'll see some platoon with
yep.
Against lefties. I could see Whit Merrifield going out to right with Chris Owings playing second base. I think that's something that they'll explore. I think they want to, in a 150 game season for Jorge Soler, which may be like a unicorn, but if it were to happen, I think they want to get 40 games in right field. I don't see it happening, but you know, it's possible. Personally, I just stick Soler at DH and let him go 145 times there. But especially now with the Salvador Perez injury, if he's not in the lineup, Jorge Soler is the most important player on the team. Because if he's what he can be, if he's what he was for 2 months last year, they're not going to really feel too much because they didn't have him for 4 months. And he just basically, you know, swap in Soler for Perez and you've got the power there. But I believe that Brian Goodwin is going to start the season in right field against all righties and some lefties probably. And that's just the way it's going to go. I get the very distinct impression that Brett Phillips is going to have to hit his tail off. And he so far hasn't done that yet. I think he's going to start in AAA, and I think, you know, he'll find his way to the big leagues because, again, there's Jorge Soler's injury issues, and Brian Goodwin is not exactly an Iron Man either. So the wild card here is Jorge Bonifacio, who, when I was here last year, it was before his suspension, and he was the best player I saw, better than Whit Merrifield, better than Salvador Perez, you know, better than any of the guys you'd expect him to not be better than. And then he got suspended, and it was a bad season for him, and he kind of looks like he's fallen out of favor with the Royals, but he's looked pretty good this year too. And it could just be that he's a spring training warrior, which a lot of guys are. Mike Moustakas was for many years. He could factor in. And for my money, I would put Bonifacio out there because he's more likely to be part of the future than Brian Goodwin. But I like Goodwin too. I don't know what it is. There's something I see in Brian Goodwin, and I don't think he's an impact player or anything, but that's a pretty good fourth outfielder on a good team. You know, so if you can see what you have there with him, he can handle center, put him in right, he's okay. He's got a little pop. He can get on base a little bit. You know, he's a nice player, and I don't have a problem with that. I think it's in the Royals' best interest if either Brett Phillips or Jorge Bonifacio wins the job. I just don't think they will.
Are you listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the snow-covered Midwest this morning? My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Our guest is David Leske, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter, at DB Leske, L-E-S-K-Y. All right, David, one of the more fascinating stories, and look, I'm going back, I think, 5 years on this. Maybe I'm overshooting that. Maybe it's 4 years. But there have been very few players, when I go to spring training, and you're there right now, when I go to spring training, there are very few players that just jump out and kind of catch your attention as, I got to watch this guy. But from the very beginning, from when he was maybe 16, 17, 18 years old, Alberto Mondesi, formerly Raul Mondesi, was one of those guys. And it kind of started on those backfields, and you've been up there. You have the main field at Surprise, the main stadium, and then you have the backfields where the players work out. But when you watch the guys take batting practice and do the base running drills, maybe the only people who jumped out to me in terms of overall game, and this even goes back to the Florida days back in Baseball City, the only guys who kind of jumped off the page like, oh my gosh, you got to watch this guy, were probably Johnny Damon and Carlos Beltran. And then the first time I saw Aldebaran Mondesi, he may not be the most perfect player in the world, but when I saw him the first time and I watched him glide while running the bases, I thought Carlos Beltran. And this offseason, the Royals, and I think Dayton Moore has even said, he's told him, you are going to be the Patrick Mahomes of the Royals. And I'm not sure that's fair, but that is the expectation. And I firmly believe that. As you've watched him over these last couple of weeks, and he's admitted that maybe in the past he has been kind of prone to giving in to injury a little bit, like maybe hurt, but I'm not going to play, whereas now he's more of, I'm going to play. Does he look like the more committed player that the Royals are looking for?
Absolutely. And I was hoping you bring him up because, excuse me, he is a player who jumps off the field. Every time you watch him,
absolutely,
he is the most talented player out there, at least on the Royals. And that's not to say he's the best player on the team, but he's the most talented player. And he looks a little bulkier, but in a good way. You know, he was pretty slight last year. And in the past, he was even bigger last year than the year before. But looks like he's put on some good muscle. He's still flying. He let off Saturday's game. I think it was a first-pitch home run. And, you know, because it was a first-pitch home run, you're still kind of settling in, looking around the ballpark. I'd never been
right
to Tempe. And so I was kind of looking around, and I hear the crack of the bat. I didn't even find the ball. I knew it was gone. It's that kind of sound. That he's that kind of player. Like you said, there are limitations to his game. Well, there's a limitation to his game, and it's that he doesn't ever stop swinging. But, you know, everything else, I mean, that guy, he just oozes talent. And you know he's the most talented player on the field pretty much every time you watch him. You know, he's not Mike Trout. I'm not saying that he's as good as Mike Trout, but he shares a field with Mike Trout. And as far as talent goes, Mondesi's not, I mean, he's not especially close, but he's a lot closer than most players in baseball. And so, you know, that was...
Right, I got you.
It was fun to see those two on the field at the same time. And it's just, it's a different kind of sound off his bat. You pay attention when he's on the bases. You pay attention when the ball is hit to him. I don't know if it'll be the Royals' Patrick Mahomes, but he needs to be, and I think he can be.
Right.
He's just so much fun to watch. We've talked about it 15 times probably, but I could talk about it 15 more if you want.
Sure. It's just, you know, when you talk about the sound off the bat, I'm reminded of I'll call him my friend. I think he was a friend of all of ours, Buck O'Neill. Great Negro Leagues player, manager, made it to the major leagues as a coach. And he would always say when he walked into a stadium, he could hear the sound off the bat. And there were only three players he heard the same sound from in his life. One was Josh Gibson, the great catcher who's now in the Baseball Hall of Fame. One was Babe Ruth, and one was Bo Jackson. Now, look, mm-hmm. I'm not going to put Alberto Mondesi in that group, but when the sound off the bat catches your attention, that is a big, big thing.
Yeah, that's an elite talent. And I'm excited to watch him every day for the Royals. I'm upset he's not in the lineup today because it's my last game before I go home. But I'll see him again at the end of March, I guess. So it's okay. And yeah, he's the guy who, you know, when you talk about building a winner, you either have to have a bunch of really good players, or you can have a couple really big stars and then a nice supporting cast around them. Mondesi is the really big star. If he can be that, then the Royals rebuild has a chance to work and work quickly. So he's just got to build off his 2018. And, you know, what I've seen in 2019 in spring training, the few times I've seen him, he looks like he's ready to go for that. So I'm really looking forward to his 2019 season.
All right. Hey, David, I'm coming up on a timeout here. Do you have a couple of extra minutes to spend with us, or do you need to run to get cover in the Royals?
No. You can keep me. I'm just going to Whataburger in a little bit, so not to make y'all jealous.
Oh, you're killing me, David. Oh, my gosh, you're killing me. Patrick Mahomes needs to get on this Whataburger, In-N-Out, whatever it is.
I know.
He needs to get it to Kansas. You're killing me. All right, well, we will take a quick timeout. We're speaking with David Leske, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at DB Leske, LESKY. And you're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullig is running the show. And we're taking cover from the snow. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. There's the Beastie Boys I was talking about. Chris Bullig is on board with my request for Beastie Boys music. You're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts, and it's snow-covered Sunday morning here in Kansas City. And fortunately for our good friend David Leske, who is our guest right now, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus, he is in Arizona at spring training and avoiding all of this snow. By the way, David, because of the snow today, I was trying to get down the street this morning, and I was going sideways, so I was able to hook up this app to actually do the show from my kitchen. And so I was able, in that last commercial break, able to get cereal for the kids together. Actually, my oldest got his own, but my youngest, I was able to help him out a little bit.
Perfect. How much snow did we get back there?
It depends where you live. I live like in the Waldo area, so it's about 2 to 2.
Okay,
if you live north of the river, what's that?
That's not too bad.
No, if you live north of the river, it's a little yeah. worse. But when I was trying to get out this morning, the ice had formed underneath the snow, which is why I was going sideways down the street. So I decided, okay, let's try the app today. And Chris Bullig, by the way, thank you for helping us hook this up today. Todd Lebo and the Drake and everybody else. So I know other guys use it. Stephen St. John, Nate Bicchetti use it when they're on the road. So happy to be able to do this in front my kitchen sink.
You're going to get dressed. It's perfect.
Yes, exactly. Well, I am dressed. I was dressed to go outside,
so now I'm sweating.
Yes. I have like two long sleeve shirts on, two sweatshirts, and a jacket, and I'm sweating now. Hosting the show. So you're in Arizona, enjoying much better weather than we are right now, covering the Kansas City Royals as they get ready for 2019. Before I get into the pitching, a couple of local notes to touch on. And one of the big storylines early on has been Bubba Starling. And look, I've been covering Bubba Starling since, God, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, and, you know, getting his start at Gardner Edgerton High School, and he was a superstar, three-sport athlete, which, by the way, I would tell every kid in the world, don't focus on one sport.
Yeah.
Do all the sports that you love, and, you know, I can count on, you know, my friends, Brian McCray and Dana Hughes, and on and on and on, who have played multiple sports over the years. It's the best thing for you. But for Bubba Starling, we all know the struggles. We all know the injuries. He's been off to a hot start. He was on the outside looking in the offseason, and the club decided to bring him back on a minor league deal. So as you've watched him, we all know his defensive expertise is unmatched in the organization. He's just failed to hit. So as you've watched him over this last several days, what have you seen from Bubba Starling, and is there an outside chance that at some point he will be on the major league roster in 2019?
So here's the issue that I've had with Starling since I've been
okay.
They won't pitch to him. He walked, I think, four times.
He had a walk. He had a walk-off walk the other night.
Yes. on Friday or Thursday, maybe. Yeah, it was Thursday. On Thursday, he came on late. I think he made an out earlier in the game, and it was a nondescript at bat. But he walked in the eighth, and he actually bat flipped that walk, by the way. I thought, that's some
right.
I mean, the eighth inning of a spring training game before March.
Right.
But that's okay. And then he walked in the bottom of the ninth to win the game. And then Saturday he walked a couple times too. So he didn't play Friday. Friday he walked a couple times, and I didn't see him yesterday. I haven't had a really good opportunity to see him swing the bat, but he does, if you're working that many walks, and he's getting deep into counts too. These aren't like four pitch walks where the pitches are 19 feet outside and it's an easy base on balls. No, he's fouling pitches off. He's handling himself well. Interestingly enough, I was going to say I'd like to see him do it in the beginning of a game against big leaguers rather than the end, but he's faced a couple of big leaguers since I've been here, and his two home run game was a game he started. So that was against
right.
big league players too. And look, I haven't had a chance to read. Jeffrey Flanagan has a piece up, an interview with him that I haven't had a chance to read yet. It's bookmarked on my phone. I just haven't gotten there. Been busy with vacation stuff, but it does seem like he's rededicated himself, and it's an easy story to tell when he's hitting well in spring training. So we'll see how it plays out, but he does look, I don't want to say more locked in, because that might imply that he wasn't necessarily locked in before. I don't think that was the case, but he does, maybe there's just an added dedication. Can he fail?
Maybe he looked a little bit lost before.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it just seems to be just very much in the game more. And obviously we know what kind of defense he can play. The bat's the question. And he's a big dude. He's got power. He should be muscular. There have been questions about his dedication to baseball. And so I think that's fair. He hasn't played much winter ball. And when you're a top prospect who struggled like that, you should probably go to the winter leagues, honestly. I don't know. There might be reasons beyond what we know publicly. But from an outside perspective, it kind of seems like he probably should have been doing that, but he didn't. There's been injury issues too. And so that's something to think about moving forward with him. But at the same time, it's been really nice to see him play well. And look, I don't think he's on the he's not on the long list to come up to the big leagues. He's not the first guy up in all likelihood. It's probably Brett Phillips if there's an injury. And then after that, like we mentioned, it's probably Jorge Bonifacio if there's an injury. But look, he's there.
Right.
He's on the list. And next year there's going to be some openings. Billy Hamilton's on a one-year deal. Alex Gordon is on the final year of his deal. And I can't imagine he'll be back in 2020, as difficult as it is to think about. There's some outfield openings there. So if Bubba Starling wants to be a big leaguer, he might be up in 2019, but he has a chance to position himself for 2020 at the very least. And so far, so good for him. And hopefully he can carry it over into the season and turn things around and become, at the very least, a quality big leaguer. I'm skeptical because you see it long enough that he is not, that you have to assume it's not going to happen. But, hey, stranger things have happened than guys developing late.
Yeah, and there's by the way, I know people want to bail sometimes and say, God, he had a $7 million signing bonus, and God, he should be up here. He was a top five pick, but it doesn't happen all the time, and that's fine.
No, guys fail. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, look at Billy Beane at Oakland. How's his career turned out so far? He's been pretty good, right?
Oh yeah.
We're joined by David Leske from Baseball Perspectives, who covers the Royals. You can follow him on Twitter at DB Leske. Let's talk a little pitching here. We talked about Danny Duffy and his injury right now, and we heard, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Salvador Perez said, well, if opening day was tomorrow, Brad Keller would be the starter. And look, and Salvi had to, he was, if you know Salvador Perez, he gets caught up in the moment. And I totally, totally get it. So, and then he had to backtrack the next day and say, well, I'm not the manager. I don't have to make the decisions. Because, the social media backlash and all that kind of stuff. Right. But it looks like Brad Keller, who was outstanding yesterday, I think you saw him yesterday, and Jake Junis would be the top two, if not 2-3, behind Duffy in the rotation. And Keller yesterday, what was that first inning, David? Was it 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes?
I don't even think it was that long. So he went. It's so interesting because I think about Keller last spring training, and I've said this before, but they had the two Rule 5 picks. It was him and Birch Smith. And I came to spring training last year a little bit later than this. It was early March still. And I'm going, I'm so excited to see Birch Smith. And then Brad Keller comes in, and I'm going, I can get a drink right now if I want, something. And the first pitch comes in, it's like 96. I'm going, wait a minute, I didn't know he threw. So I'm watching, and obviously we saw how that turned out with Keller and Smith for the Royals. But then he comes into this spring training and you go, well, okay, he might be the Royals' number two starter. And that's not necessarily damning against the Royals because he was so good last year, low 3 ERA. The thing I really liked about Keller, we talked about this on Sports Night a couple weeks ago, he got better as the season went on. His spin rate went up. His velocity came back in September as a starter, which I think was him. My theory, I haven't talked to him about this, but my theory is he was airing it out in the bullpen, went to the rotation, and backed off more than he needed to. And as he started more and more, he realized what he was able to do and maintain throughout games. And so by September, he was comfortable. And now, there's a big school of thought. He walks too many and strikes out too few to be any good. And I think that there's some regression coming unless he can fix that a little bit. But at the same time, he throws such a heavy fastball, gets so many ground balls. Those guys don't typically get a ton of strikeouts. Think about Derek Lowe, Brandon Webb. Those guys were not, and they had strikeouts. They had big strikeout seasons. But the sinker ballers tend to just let hitters get themselves out by pounding the ball into the ground. And there's a lot out there right now. It seems like every third day there's a new Brad Keller might surprise you article out somewhere. He's really, really impressive. What's funny though about Perez saying he's number one is like 3 days earlier he was talking about how to me Jorge Lopez is number one. So you go, right. Salvador Perez.
Salvi gets caught up in the moment and he likes to play along, and I'm totally on board with that. I'm totally okay with that.
Well, why wouldn't the team's catcher say every pitcher is the number one? Come on. He's got to believe that, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, him, Jake Junis, who I mentioned before with Cam Gallagher behind the plate potentially. I think I threw this on Sportsnet too. I think he's the Royals' best pitcher this season. I think Jake Junis ends up having his best season, and he's the best pitcher on the staff. And that's not that I don't think Brad Keller is good. I really like Brad Keller actually. I think like I said, there will probably be some regression. It's hard to put up a low 3 ERA in general. In this day and age in baseball, but what he does well counteracts what everybody else in baseball does well on offense, which is hit home runs. So that's a good thing. Jake Junis, the issue with him is he doesn't do that so well. He gives up some bombs, and that's because his slider hangs sometimes. And a slider that a 1/100th of a second difference in your wrist snap is the difference between the strikeout and home run sometimes, because it either hangs in the middle of the plate and it's really easy to hit, or it looks like a fastball and it just dives out of the zone and you're going back to the dugout. So he's got a bigger margin for error, I think, but or a smaller margin for error, I guess, bigger error graph. But I think Junis is the best pitcher on the team this year. And it's not to say that I think Duffy's going to have a bad season either. I think there's serious potential in this pitching staff, not to be, you know, the Nationals or the Indians or anything, but I think the starting rotation can be above average. I'm not sure it will be, but I think it certainly can be. And that's,
yep.
Ian Kennedy's got to do well. Heath Fillmyer, who I don't think he's thrown yet this spring, actually, which makes me wonder, maybe there's something wrong there. But Jorge Lopez threw on Thursday, I want to say, and he looks pretty good. I think that was a nice outing for him in his first spring outing. And you know, there's some arms they're throwing at it. Hopefully five of them can stick, or even if three of them are pretty good, and he kind of cycled through the other two to figure out what they have. I think there's some potential for this pitching staff this year.
Yep, and we're speaking with David Leske, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Twitter at DB Leske. And the Brad Keller thing was, it made me look silly last year because he was so good out of the bullpen, and then they put him in the rotation, and I was one of those dumb people who said, well, he's working good out of the bullpen. Why take him out of there? But then I look back at his minor league numbers. I'm like, all he's ever been is a starter his whole life. So the Royals were right. I was wrong, which is why I do this. And I'm not running a Major League Baseball team.
Right. Same here.
Kind of big picture here is I'm going to back out and take a 30,000 foot view of Major League Baseball. So in the last 2 weeks, Manny Machado has signed a $300 million deal with the Padres. Bryce Harper signed a $330 million deal with the Phillies, although for less money per season. I think it's insane on all accounts. I always go back to Albert Pujols, because the Angels thought if they bought the biggest guy in baseball, they were going to win the World Series. And the Royals dispatched them in, what, was it 2014? In three straight games, it was just it was embarrassing for the Angels. You know, when you got 25 guys on a roster, I'm not sure the $300 million deal works. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, A-Rod ended up winning a World Series with the Yankees, but I really don't think this chasing the biggest deal in baseball works. But maybe I'm wrong. Do you think either the Padres with Manny Machado in the next 10 years, or the Phillies with Bryce Harper for the next 13 years, do you think they will be in a position to win a World Series? We saw the Royals do it a very different way, but will those teams be in a position to battle for a World Series?
So I think both can and possibly will. I think that of the two, you're right. It's difficult to win with a mega contract because for long term, because there's salary constraints. You know, right now the Padres have Hosmer and Machado making a ton of money, and nobody else is because they're all young players. And
well, and Will Myers too.
But yeah, Will Myers has a ton of money out there too. But really, it's funny, they added a $30 million per year player, and their payroll is what, like $105 million still. So. It's,
right,
and that's with two guys who are making about $20 million a year. So there's the way it works for the Padres right now, at least, is because all their team is cheap, other than those guys, and you know they have some room to work a little bit. You know, San Diego, they've got some money. Let's be real, every team has some money.
Right.
And so I think they'll be okay on that in the short term. I worry about them long term. The Phillies, I worry less about, just because they're such a big market. They have more money than just about anybody outside of, you know, the Yankees, Red Sox, and a couple others.
Dodgers.
So, yeah, Dodgers and Giants maybe. So you worry less about that because if they have to go over to win, they can go over to win. Whereas the Padres, I don't think they can support a $212 million payroll, not long term. So I think it's questionable. What's interesting about the Phillies deal is, like you said, 13 years. So it's less average annual value, which helps them with the luxury tax. Basically, what I think they did is they gave Harper a 10-year, $300 million deal with a 3-year, $30 million deferment, where they don't care if he's good at the end. They don't care if they have to release him at the end. They wanted to get that average annual value down for the luxury tax number, just for year-to-year payrolls to be able to maybe go out and get, I don't know, there's a guy named Mike Trout who – might want to play in Philadelphia in a couple years. That might help.
Right.
So, I think the Phillies can win. I think short term the Padres are more likely, just because they have such a strong talent base coming up from the minors. But I think, I shouldn't say more likely, because the Phillies are a really good team right now. But I think both can win. I think the Phillies are more likely to win long term with a mega contract. So. My guess is the Padres are hoping that their young players become stars and Machado opts out after 5 years, so that they can stop paying him while they have that kind of talent.
All right. Hey, David, I hate to cut you off, but Chris is telling me I got to take a break. So you tell you what, the benefit for you is you get to go out into the Arizona sunshine.
That's true.
While the rest of us here in Kansas City get to suffer with the snow and ice.
Like I said, I'll be back there in a couple of days to suffer with you.
All right. Well, hopefully it's cleared off by then. Hey, David, I can't thank you enough. And again, David Leske writes for Baseball Prospectus, covers the Royals. Follow him on Twitter at DB Leske, LESKY. David, thank you very much, and enjoy the sunshine for the next couple of days.
Oh, I will. I will. Thanks, Brad.
All right. That is David Leske from Baseball Prospectus joining us. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.